And you say, okay, will you really look? I mean, will you tell me? Will you write it out? In other words, all you're really saying to him as you're helping him build his strength, you're saying, you're terribly interested he do this. So commitment is a further strength giver. And this is why in reality therapy, we ask people when they say they'll do something, within reason, we ask for a commitment that they'll do it. A friend of mine, a psychiatrist, who uses reality therapy, gets people to write it out. Keep a little book. He calls it their commitment book. And they write in the things they're going to do, and then when he sees them at the end of the week, they check off, have you done it or haven't you done it? But he doesn't ask them, because I've taught him not to ask them. He doesn't ask them, well, why haven't you done it? Because they know why they haven't done it. Lots of reasons. That make numbers. Reality therapy step six is we don't elicit, ask for, nor particularly accept excuses. We have no interest in excuses. We're interested in getting the person to get going. If he says, well, he says, you know, I was going to go out to look for work, but they didn't deliver the newspaper. So, you know, I was all planning on looking at the Help Wanted ads on Monday morning, and here the newspaper didn't come, and so I figured I'd better take off a week until next Monday. Well, how about Tuesday? No, I think you ought to really start looking for a job on Monday, you know, so I'm going to take off till next Monday. And then sure enough, next Monday came, and gee, had a cold. And now, if you listen to all these excuses and you say, yeah, well, gee, you wouldn't want to look for a job with a cold, and you certainly couldn't look for a job without the newspaper, you know, and, well, then the person will get his inadequacy compounded by someone who's accepting and excuses. And if a fellow says they didn't deliver the newspaper, you say, well, you know, I mean, is there any other place to get a newspaper? You know, you start saying these things. I mean, is that it? Or you say to him in reality therapy, if he say, well, do you plan to go to work or not? Going to work has nothing to do with the newspaper. So you try and eliminate the need for the excuse and say, there are no excuses. You're going to do what you say you're going to do. Now, the last step of reality therapy, really there's another step past it, but essentially the last step of reality therapy is you don't punish people. Now, suppose he said, well, the newspaper didn't come, and say, oh, God, that's the kind of person you are. You're a lazy so-and-so. Don't do that. He's heard that. That just locks him further into the position of believing I'm inadequate. Say to him, you know, he says, are you, well, you know, what are you going to do to me? I'm not going to do anything to you. You want a job? Better look. He says, well, aren't you going to punish me? No. Now, you let a person suffer the natural consequences, like maybe you're working with a parolee, and he's supposed to get a job. He doesn't get a job. You say, well, what are you going to do to me? I said, I'm going to lock you up. Well, that's punishment. No, no, it's not punishment. I said, if you didn't get a job, I was going to lock you up. He didn't get a job, I'm going to lock you up. That's a perfectly natural consequence. You're aware of it. All you had to do to avoid it was get a job. Oh, but I didn't think you were going to do it. Well, I'm going to do it. Well, how long am I going to be locked up? Well, I don't know. If you had any control, I'll lock you up for the weekend and maybe have some control over the situation, or maybe lock you up for a month or two and there while you figure out another what to do, but can't walk around the streets without work. The condition of parole the judge laid down was you shall get work. I worked it out with you, you'd have work by Monday. You didn't have it by Monday, so go back to jail. That's all. Jail is for people who don't fulfill their conditions of parole. That's what jail's for. But he says, that's mean and cruel, and, you know, I don't like it. Well, I understand that, and it is mean and cruel, but that was the condition. That's the natural consequence. In other words, a natural consequence is something that you know will happen, and something that will naturally happen to other people in your circumstances. In other words, if you have 30 parolees, and you told them all to go to work by that Monday, and none of them go to work, you don't lock up one and leave the other 29 go. That's an unnatural punitive consequence. You act with some degree of consistency toward people involved. But generally, you don't use punishment. Generally, you wouldn't use it. If you're dealing with a kid in school, and the kid upsets the school, and you send him to the office, you don't hit him in the office. We'll go into that in some more detail, because there are some people who are interested in discipline, maybe a little later, but the point is, all he does is sit in the office till he's willing to go back to class. He has to make a plan to not disrupt his class. If he doesn't want to make a plan, he sits in the office. How long does he sit in the office? To the end of the school year, if necessary. That's all. Not past June, you tell the kid. Not past June, you know. Kid kid says, but it's only December. Yeah, yeah, well, it's all right. I mean, you're either going to make it in class or you're not. Those are the only two choices. We're not going to hit you, punish you, yell at you. We have no desire to do that. We run a good school. You want to be part of our school, follow the rules. If you don't want to be part of our school, don't come. Sit here. I mean, you can still be part of the school, but you'll sit in this chair. This is where you sit when you won't follow the rules. Well, that's cruel, the kid says. Make me sit in the chair. I'm not making you sit in the chair. You're choosing to sit there. If you'll choose to follow the rules like the other students do, then you can go back to class. That's the choice. There is no other choice. I have no desire to punish you. I don't want to hear any reasons from you on why you can't get along in class. You'll have to. That's the only class you got. That's it. That's the story. If you offer people two alternatives, the choice to follow the rules and get along or the choice to sit away from the class, then they have to make up their mind. If they want to sit away from the class, it's their choice. It's not punitive. Punitive is like when you send a man to prison.
Could you perhaps say a few words relative to the degree of strength or lack of strength in individuals? How to account for the differences, the role of body chemistry in emotional illness? Well, I don't really know how to account for the differences in strength of individuals. I got a feeling that body chemistry doesn't have an awful lot to do with it. It might, possibly, but I think it has to do with how you're raised, as I said, and who your teachers were, kind of folks your parents are, and whether you develop friends and this kind of thing. Because if you have a good social support system going on around you, then you're going to be stronger. And then if you go and do something with your life that seems reasonable and people say that's good, you're going to be stronger that way too. And I think people get raised differently and they accomplish a lot of different things, and there's a wide variation of strength among people. Some people are strong enough until really hard times hit them and then they fold up. I just practically finished reading a new book. It's been out a while. It's received quite a bit of publicity, called Alive, the story of a group of survivors of a plane crash in the Andes Mountains and somewhere up in the Peruvian Andes or Chilean Andes. And they were in this plane crash in the, for 70 days in freezing weather, and those with more strength survived. That's all there is to it. And where they got this from is their backgrounds generally. I don't think it's any mystery why some people are stronger than others, but there are other factors besides love and worth which are involved, and I'll be developing those other factors tomorrow morning when I talk about this concept of positive addiction. But it's more than that. So it's a whole concept. It's another way in which people can gain strength, and it's kind of interesting that way. But body chemistry and that kind of stuff, I don't know much about that, and I don't think anyone else does either. You read a lot about things like that, that they discovered that the reason people go crazy is they're lacking vitamins, or they're lacking lithium, or they're lacking something. But it's very hard to figure out, make this kind of thing scientifically proven. And now there's no doubt about the fact that your body chemistry affects you. It's just a question of, really, it's a question of which comes first. In other words, if you're very, very upset because you don't have anyone to love you for a long period of time, and everybody knows that makes you upset, and that could alter your body chemistry, possibly, which might continue to be altered even after you get over the upset. So there might, some people may rebound from a serious upset more slowly than others, and maybe that's the body chemistry that's still taking place. I don't know, but it's just that, to me, when you see someone that's psychologically upset, it just isn't a mystery, that's all. You talk to the person, you talk to the people around them, you see what they've done with their life, and it's no mystery. So I don't see why we make such a big deal about these things. People that come from good homes with strong and loving parents and concerned people around them and do well in school, and have friends, they don't get into the kinds of trouble that we're dealing with. They just don't, that's all. Now, do all those people also have successful chemistry? Well, it's hard to say. I just think that the chemistry part is what the psychological part and the sociological part is so much more important. But everyone is looking for, you know, Dr. Ehrlich's magic bullet. And the magic bullet might have done a little bit of good for syphilis, although not a hell of a lot of good for it. But it was a feeling that we can solve this problem. And if everyone in our mental hospitals had syphilis, I mean, it used to be that, 100 years ago, most of the people in a mental hospital were suffering from syphilis. And if we could have cured syphilis, we'd have wiped out mental illness, it was figured. But we got pretty well handling syphilis now, at least the final stages of it. You don't see too many people in these stages, but there's still a lot of people that are not doing too well, or a little bit crazy. It's not all syphilis, but one time it was thought to be. In fact, at one time, syphilis was just about the only disease there was. I mean, it was heart disease and bone disease and mental disease, because syphilis, that spirochete, can eat you up in lots of different places. But that isn't it. How do we get across to patients that manipulation is a weakness rather than a strength? Well, I don't think you have to get that across to people by discussing it. I think you have to, if you're in a position, you don't allow yourself to be manipulated. And then people find out the manipulation doesn't work. If someone would like to play a manipulating patient, I could very, very easily show how you handle that, by demonstrating how I would not allow myself to be manipulated. So if someone wrote that question would like to do that, I could certainly again show you that very, very simply. Because I've learned some things, and one of the things I've learned is that maybe I can be manipulated, but I make it harder. When working to help folks who have addiction problems like alcoholism, one of the most difficult things to achieve is for them to accept and deal with their problem openly. The question is, how do you, using your theory, work through the defense of denial? My only problem in life is alcohol. I don't have any other problems. Well, now they're not denying the alcoholism there. I would think that if they denied alcoholism, they'd say, I'm a little bit upset and I occasionally take a drink, but I don't have an alcohol problem. If they say my only problem in life is alcohol and I don't have any other problems, I could see where that could be a denial too. Well, perhaps someone could play the role of an alcoholic and we could discuss it, because I could again show that one pretty good. But I mean, you just handle it, that's all. This is why it's so difficult. This is why I've given up answering questions, because it's so unsatisfactory as compared to a demonstration. If the person that had this nice five-hole yellow paper would like to play a manipulating patient or an alcoholic or both, because sometimes an alcoholic is a very good example of a manipulating type person, I'd be very happy to, and very quickly, wouldn't take any time at all, show you how you work with it. I mean, I think I could do it fairly quickly and quite succinctly. So you could learn then, at least how I do it. How do you get a child who has given up? Sixth grader, age 14, to make the value judgment necessary before he can make a plan. He is already enrolled in reading and math classes where the teacher is willing to individualize and has adequate teaching materials and attention, but the kid has given up. Well, now the only way you can work with a child like that is to gain a relationship with him, talk with him, become his friend. It's the only way, in my opinion. Threatening him won't work. A 14-year-old kid in the sixth grade, he's been threatened plenty. And hitting him or yelling at him, that isn't going to do much good. He's probably been hit and yelled at plenty. Have to become his friend. And then when he believes you're his friend, then you ask him, look, would you be interested in learning something? I have a program here just for you. program in which you cannot fail. Theoretically, individualized program should be a non-failure type program. But you have to spend a lot of time making friends with the kid, talking with him, maybe, you know, like, just let's say that you bake cookies on the weekend at your home and your teacher bring a cookie or something, and over when he comes in on Monday morning, say, look, I was baking cookies and I was thinking about you. Here, have a cookie. And don't ask him for to say, you know, don't ask him to bow down and say, oh, my goodness, teacher, thank you. Just give him the cookie and say, that's good, you know, enjoy it. And then a few little moves like that on your part, this kid will be feeling you're his friend, and then you can say to him, you know, I spent a lot of time figuring out ways to help kids like you that are behind. Just work by yourself. What you do, you can't fail at it. No one will know what you're doing, just for yourself. And would you like to try something? And then start him with a little bit, something that's so absurdly simple that he can't do badly at it. And then when he does well, say, you know, that's pretty good. How about a little more? And start from little bites and gradually take bigger bites. Friendly approach, and then small increments. And you can usually, especially if, as this teacher says, she's in a position to individualize and give them some little attention, certainly very, very successful approach in many cases. Nobody enjoys failing. It's very painful. They're looking for someone that will show them a better way. But this teacher is saying, I'm willing to show them a better way. But you have to get friendly enough with him so that he'll accept what you're willing to do. He'll feel you care. If he feels you don't care, then he wouldn't believe that you're really going to show him a better way. All you're going to do is teach him another way to fail. See, that's what he's frightened of, and that hurts already so much he doesn't want it anymore. It's easier to give up. So again, the first step, the getting involved, is so important. Here's a question. I often run into clients who are very reluctant to give up their psychoses or addictions. Is my friendship rapport relationship the only thing I can offer to help them start to free themselves? I work in a county mental health setting and deal with a wide variety of problems. Well, the question is kind of stated here, is my friendship the only thing I can offer? Well, I hate to, you know, say flatly yes, but that's kind of the answer. Yes is the answer. Your friendship, rapport, relationship, that's what you got. That's all you got. And you can offer money to give it up. You're not going to offer him to become governor, president. I mean, all you can offer is your friendship. But your friendship, you shouldn't think that's inconsiderable. Your friendship is valuable. The time you spend with the person is valuable. You'll talk with the person. And then you'll try to lead and guide the person toward doing something more worthwhile. So then the person will start to care more for themselves. And as they begin to care for themselves, they build a little more strength. And they learn, well, I've learned to care for my strength through this person, so it increases the friendship. But that's what you have to offer them. And that's why people become dissatisfied with reality therapy, because they think there should be something more magical. Maybe I can teach him he's acting like a child, but see, that ain't gonna do much good. It's difficult. Or maybe I can do something else with him. But all therapies ultimately get down to the fact that what will you, as the therapist, help me to do for myself, and do you care about me? So I don't know any other way. The only thing is, you shouldn't feel that's a minimal offering. It's a pretty good thing to offer him. You could give him drugs, but drugs aren't going to be his friend. It won't make him feel better. The kind of drugs you give to a mental patient, they don't do much for him. How can you effectively use reality therapy in your work and group work with institutionalized delinquents? Well, you just get them together in a group, and you talk about things that are interesting to the group. You get the group of kids to learn to care a little bit about each other by your showing care for them. You get them to talk about what they're doing. You get the group to help them make plans to do better, both in the institution and plans when they leave the institution. And it begins to help them. They begin to feel, there's a lot of people here that care about me. I better start caring about myself. And you just keep doing it. See, reality therapy isn't something going to happen overnight, but if you do it, they'll start to get the idea, people care, and I better begin to care about myself. And it's your self-image that ultimately you're trying to raise, because your self-image is tied to your strength. The more you think of yourself and think of yourself as someone, usually the stronger you are. Now, the question here is a good question. How do you get a turned-off, suspicious, drug-abusing adolescent involved? You know, it's like the old question, how do you get four elephants in a Volkswagen? And, you know, the answer is with a lot of difficulty. And you do everything you can. You spend time with the kid. You talk with him. You shoot a little pool with him. Maybe you see what he's interested in, what TV programs he watches. You chat with him. You gradually get him to feel this person cares something about me. See, that's the hardest job, this getting involved kind of a thing. It's a very difficult thing to do, but you got to do it. And people ask, how do you do it? And it's kind of like when they asked J.P. Morgan. Some guy was standing there on the dock and he saw the big yacht, and Morgan walks off it. And he says, Commodore, he says, how much does it cost to run that yacht? And Morgan said, if you got asked that question, you can't afford it. And that's very similar to how do you get involved. I mean, that's what you're learning all of your life in this business, is how to do that. You're always working. You're always thinking, how do I get involved? How do I make friends? How do I get close? How will I get that kid's attention? Will I do it with forcefully? Will I do it kind of passively? Will I do it with humor? But how will I get his attention? How will I get him to believe that here I am, and maybe I care about him, so he'll begin to care more about himself and gain some strength? That's the key to any therapeutic approach. There is no magic in that. This kid is suspicious. He's using drugs. He believes everyone's against him, and maybe he's been using amphetamines. He's a little bit paranoid, because they tend to kind of make you paranoid on top of your ordinary paranoia. And this is a difficult thing. I mean, if I could give you a key to it, I wish there were a key to it, a way to go, a system. There's been a lot of psychiatric systems where you kind of just put the guy in like a wiener machine and you turn the crank and he comes out wieners, but there is no way you can do that. I mean, there's a system here in Georgia that's been widely touted that'll cure any prisoner, make him into an ex-prisoner and make him into an A&M citizen. 98% cure rate, called Yonan Kodaks or something like that. You take them and you do the Yonan Kodaks thing, and it was a system. And maybe it works. I mean, I came here from Georgia and fell in Los Angeles, was all excited about it, and he couldn't get me excited about it because I didn't get excited about it, that's all. I said, if it's curing every prisoner in Georgia, it's got to spread. I said, it's got to spread, because a Georgia prisoner is about the same as any other kind of prisoners. But I hear less about Yonan Kodaks now, so. The point is, it was a system, and maybe it did work, and maybe it still does work. Maybe people just don't know how to use it. I don't know. But I haven't been able to figure out a system. You got this client, and the client's sitting on this chair, and the client doesn't like you, and doesn't like where he is, and doesn't like anything about everything, and he's miserable and upset and everything else, and your job is to reach him. And if you don't like that job, then you should go into certified public accounting. it's just that simple, that's all. I mean, you can't tell me, you know, people say to me, well, I don't like working with the people I work with, you know. Well, hell, then do something else. If all these people were easy to reach and they responded quickly and they all got well, hell, there'd be no jobs. You know, it's just like those kids learning to read. Hell, if they all learned to read, 2,600 people would be out of work immediately in New York State. Got to sit down every morning and pray to God they don't learn in a big hurry. Fortunately, that prayer will be answered. Don't worry about that one. There's a caseworker who says, I'm dealing with a female, age 19. She has 3 children. She has a low income. She has a 7th grade education. And this woman is evidently crisis-oriented. Inability to plan ahead. No background experience in problem-solving to draw on. Extremely limited options. That's right. That's right. She's dealing with a tough case. But she doesn't say what the problem is. I guess it's just all problems, probably. It's just problems going every direction you look. But one thing I'd be counseling her is to refrain on having any more kids for a while. That's the one area I'd work at. Because if you're 19 and you got 3 kids, that's kind of scary. You extrapolate that to 38, man, that really is... counselor on taking better care of her kids, counselor on perhaps getting a job, and talk with her and see what options she has. Actually, the truth is that people in the lower educational brackets that are willing to do, say, work that requires little education are probably easier in the present time to place than people who want a more educational type job. If a person would like to play that person, why, that'd be fine. I'll counsel with her. And that's what you do. I mean, when you take a job as a caseworker working for the DFCS, which evidently means people who are kind of not doing too well, I mean, when you take that kind of a job, these are the kind of people you'll be counseling with. And you're not going to be counseling with people from the Harvard Graduate School and things like that. But when you got drug users and non-drug users, and they tend to glorify the drug users as big shots, you know, they put stuff up their veins, you make a rule, in this group we don't talk about drugs. And the reason we don't talk about drugs is we don't know anything about them. Which you don't, unless you've been shooting drugs, you don't know much about them. And that kind of eliminates that problem. Just say, we don't talk about them, and you give a reason, because talking about it, we don't know anything about it, and talking about it isn't going to stop anyone from shooting drugs anyway. So we just don't talk about it, period. I think that works the best. Talking about drugs is such a dead end and such a boring thing that it just... It gives them a chance to kind of act out in the group therapy, and it just doesn't do any good. So I just make a rule, we're going to talk about it. That's all. That's a blanket rule, just like, you know, we don't deface the furniture or something like that. And if an individual child says, look, I must talk about drugs, say, well, we'll do that on an individual basis. So you don't get this build-up, this big deal where... One kid says, I shot up, 15 bags a day. Another kid says, I shot 30 bags a day. Another says, I shot 500 bags a day, and I had a $400 a day habit, you know. I had 14 girls out hustling, and it just gets absolutely ridiculous because it's all baloney anyway. Yeah. And so I just take the thing is that you don't help drug addicts by talking about drugs any more than we get with a group of alcoholics and sit around and talk about drinking. It isn't going to do them any good. They'll talk about it, but it isn't going to do them any good. Sure, certainly. Not peer pressure where the peers have anything where they can sanction another kid. Peers... pressure where the peers, like for instance the Ventura School with Lincoln School I worked at, if a girl came in and she said, look, I can't read, I would ask the group and I'd say, who will teach her to read? Because the group is pretty good at that, you know, and some would volunteer. That kind of peer pressure, you wouldn't hardly call it pressure, but that's the kind of thing I believe in. Or this girl has, one girl was saying, well, gee, I just never look nice. And so another girl would say, well, look, you know, we'll help you groom, cosmetic, do your hair, and show you how to set it. And some girls just didn't know this. But where a girl, say, wouldn't get up in the morning, It wasn't up to the peers to handle that. It was up to us to handle it, or up to the peers maybe to help by suggesting to the girl some things that she might do or something like that, but not no peer pressure where the peers have any sanctionability. Like the girl says, well, if she doesn't get up in the morning, then she can't have breakfast. That's okay if the staff says that. That's okay if they want. I'm not saying that's a good way to handle it, but no kid should have power over another kid because it will be abused. These children don't have the ability to use that power well. And you'll just, as abusive as a staff system is, which it could be when a staff uses abuses, a kid system exaggerates that something awful. Kids don't grade each other, they don't rate each other, they don't have to do with each other going home, they can make suggestions, they can make positive ideas, but no sanctionability is my own opinion. Now, I'm not saying I'm right. I could be wrong. But this is what I believe in, and this is what I've used when I've had a chance to work in these kinds of organizations. So, I mean, who knows who's right? But I got to tell you what I believe in and what I've experienced and used. And some of these programs, like guided group interaction, they tend to get into group sanctions. And that's when they say that's reality therapy, that isn't reality therapy. Now, they may use some reality therapy techniques, but that's in direct opposition to what I believe. And yes, go ahead. Right. Well, the question has to do with the mental retarded. And there isn't any big difference in the mental retarded and the normal except in capacity. That the mental retarded person has many less options, both just in the things he can do and in the jobs he can have and everything else. But, well, you can reason with a mentally retarded, but it's on a different plane. It has to be on a simpler plane. And things, to a mentally retarded person, you have to show him a lot more rather than reason and demonstrate with him and guide him and control him to some extent if he's going in the wrong direction, but control him in a gentle way so he'll learn something, not in a brutal way or anything like that. But it's just harder because the person has less capacity. On the other hand, it's easier to work with the mentally retarded because they don't have the capacity to get into as much difficulty. They're not into the kinds of difficulty that some smart people are in that are unbelievable. I mean, they don't get a whole city upset and things like that. But it's just a special technique. You're dealing with less ability to reason out and see the consequences of behavior and everything else. So the whole thing has to be more concrete, more simple, more straightforward. You have to sometimes take more responsibility to explain them rather than give them choices that they can't understand. But basically, you have to do something with the retarded that gives them a sense that they're worth something. That's the most serious thing in dealing with the retarded, is that they get the feeling I'm not worth anything. The problem with being retarded is that very few people are so retarded that they don't know they're retarded. They can tell that they can't do the things others can do, but they still can't do them. And that gives them a big sense of frustration. And any program for them has to have within it things that they can do, and then a lot of praise, or with a person of normal intelligence, if he does something just ordinary, I wouldn't lavish much praise on him. That would be foolish. It would be unrealistic. But if a retarded person does something, I would tend to give him more praise than I would the ordinary person, because he gets so little in the ordinary way he lives his life. Okay, thank you. I'll just go on and answer these questions, and then you can continue to ask them from the floor, too. How can a therapist effectively use the first step of reality therapy institutional study when the relationship is co-ed, without the relationship being turned quasi-courtship behavior, in other words, be misinterpreted by the client? Well, I don't think that's any serious problem. It probably is a more serious problem in an office setting rather than an institution where you're just two people alone in an office of different sex. But the thing is that you spell out what you'll do and what you won't do. And if a girl or a man, depending upon whom it is, acts seductive and tries to get this friendship into some kind of a sexual involvement, you just say, it's not going to go in that direction, that's all. This isn't the kind of friends we are. And just spell it out. I didn't make this clear, but I guess I should, that all friendships in the world, it seems to me, have certain conditions or limitations to them, that there's very few friendships, even lovers, even married people who are very much in love, still have certain conditions within this relationship that they say, now I love you, but this I won't do, or you can't do. Like, for instance, a lot of people love each other a great deal, but they don't share each other's toothbrush. You know, you read about that once in a while, and some people just don't go for that, that's all. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. You can love the living daylights out of a person and still want to have your own toothbrush. And so when you look at that, every friendship has a condition to it. Some people you just play tennis or golf with. Some people you might just play bridge with. Some people you're very friendly with them at work, but you don't see much of them away from work. Does that mean you're not good friends? No, it just means that's the kind of friends that you are, that's all. And some people don't hardly talk all year, and then they have a big Christmas party and they're lovey-dovey, and then they don't talk for the rest of the year again. And there's nothing wrong with that either. I mean, it's just everything is the way it is, that's all. But in terms of the relationship I'm talking about, when you're a therapist and you're making relationship with a client, the client says, well, look, I enjoy seeing you. Can't we go out at night together or something like that? Or can't you get me a special favor? Girls would ask me at the Ventura School, well, you really care for me? I'd say, yeah, I care for you. Well, then why don't you get me some extra cigarettes? Sneak me some extra cigarettes or something like that. And I'd say, no, I can't do that. I'm not going to break. I don't care for it. I care for you enough, so I'm not going to break the rules, because I ain't going to do anybody any good. In other words, you have to be matter-of-fact about what you'll do and what you won't do. And if you're not supposed to court your clients, then you are going to have misinterpretations if you do this. It's got to be quite open. When I worked in institution, I worked with girls, and I can't really say, maybe I'm not very attractive or something, but I can't really say that many of them ever tried to seduce me. I can't remember anybody ever trying to seduce me. So if that's a big thing among delinquents, I sure missed the boat there, I'll tell you that. I got quite friendly with some of these girls, very much so, but I'd say it was a much more a father-brother or teacher-type friendship than it was kind of a sexual deal. But I did most of my counseling work with them out in the open. I don't like to get too much locked up in rooms with people, and so I worked on the just out in the corner, the waiting room or the day room or things like that. I didn't spend very little time in my office, and I think things stay a lot better that way. Sometimes people can't handle being alone too well. But you set the limits, and if you happen to set the wrong limits, then you're in trouble. I mean, the world doesn't end, but you learn from it, that's all. The love that you speak of from parents as a child is equally important for a child to receive proper love from the opposite sex. Well, usually, in most cases, parents are usually of the opposite sex. Usually got one of each in most cases. I mean, I think fathers should love daughters, and sons should love mothers, and vice versa. But if a child should have boyfriends and girlfriends, maybe that's what means, even should little kids have boyfriends and girlfriends. I think it's nice. It's not terribly essential, I suppose, but I would like my children to go to co-educational schools, for instance, but I know kids who went to non-co-educational schools seem to come out all right. But I think the more natural you are, the better things are. And I don't think it's necessary for a child to have love from this person, that person, or somebody else. I think it's just necessary for him to feel loved. And if he just has one person that loves him and nobody else, that's okay. If he feels that love and gives him strength, that's all right. I don't know how much love a person needs. All I know is I see a lot of people who don't seem to have enough, that's all, and I don't know how much enough is. Probably none of us can get too much, but it doesn't seem to be in that big a supply anyway. So I think it's good, for instance, if a kid has both a mother and father in the home, I think that's very good, but there's a lot of families where there's only a mother or only a father, and they work out too. They do. It's not the end of the world if parents get divorced and one parent seems to be around very, very little. It's harder, but that's not the end of the world. It's just more difficult, that's all. Here's another question which I really can't answer because I don't know how to do this. I'd like to see you apply reality therapy with a 7-year-old nonverbal child who's been diagnosed as profoundly retarded and or autistic. He is a chronic head slapper. Well, if he's really banging his head, I would put a helmet on him. Well, I mean, that happened. You do that. I mean, that's a classic treatment. You put some kind of a protective headgear on him unless you're doing it for Bear Bryant, it ain't good to bang your head too much, you know. And then if he won't talk to you, you sit with him and try and play with him or try and offer him something or feed him. Try and get involved a little bit with him so he cares about you. Give him some kind of pleasure in conjunction with you, and maybe he'll start relating to you a little bit. Now, how long will this take? It's a long time, and some of these kids are very, very, very upset. And some of these, a child is profoundly retarded and autistic. There is a difference, but the difference is sometimes very hard to determine. And there are people who can determine it. I'm really not expert along those lines. But autistic children are very rare, and when they do occur, no one yet has figured out how to work with them, nor have I. So I don't know. That's something that's beyond our comprehension. So if all the things that supposedly work with them don't work, that much I do know. The things you see in the movies, don't you believe them? Those kids are right back being autistic again. You can beat them enough so that they'll come out of it. That's one of the ways that Lovas does. He scares them and beats them, and they're maybe autistic, but they're not stupid. So if someone is beating the hell out of you, you relate for a while, but as soon as he stops hitting you, you go right back to where you were. Will you say anything about the here and now emphasis in reality therapy? Well, as much as possible, you work with in the present time frame with the problems as they now exist, because those are the problems. If you had problems in the past, you can't solve the past problems unless they're also the same problems you have now. But you've got to work with the person as he is now. Now, if you are things in his past that will help you now, ask about them. For instance, you're dealing with a person that's chronically unemployed. You might inquire, when did you last hold a job? And if you found that he did hold a job successfully in the past, maybe that's a key to getting him reemployed in the future. But usually you search into the past for positive attributes, strengths. Too much of our so-called psychiatric history is a search into the past for weaknesses. And what can you build on that? It's ridiculous. I see no sense in asking a person about when he was upset in the past. It's enough he was upset in the present. You're depressed? Yes. Well, tell me about your previous depressions. Well, what do you want to know about his previous depressions for? Tell me about the time you weren't depressed, when you're getting along well. That you might build on, but to ask him about all the depressions he's had in the past, that makes no sense. It's really foolish. How much importance do you place on diagnostic classification? None. None at all. Would you treat a schizophrenic, which of course I wouldn't treat because I don't diagnose people schizophrenic, but I would treat a person that was crazy in the same way as I treat a depressed person, right? But that means I would use the same principles of reality therapy. That doesn't mean I would necessarily approach them in the same way, because I approach each person as best as I can in some way that I figure out to get involved with him and help him to face his present difficulties. And it might not be the same way, but I might not approach two depressed people in the same way either. Or two crazy people, I might approach them differently depending upon what they're talking about. I don't have a set standard approach. I figure out each approach as best as I can. And if I make a mistake, I figure another one out, that's all. I don't know what else to do. But I don't diagnose people. The diagnosis is made when the person has made one of these choices, to give up or choose a symptom. I don't care what symptom he chooses. The point is, he needs to find that love and worth again. And if he can find that, symptom will go away. And if he can't find it, the symptom will stay. Now, there are other questions from the floor. Yeah, there's a lady, yes. The question is, how do you deal with a compulsive liar? And the answer is that if you follow the concepts of reality therapy, you deal with the person's behavior. And you don't pay much attention to the lie. You pay attention to what the person does. And so when the person finds that the lies have no payoff with you, you don't care much about them one way or another. But you deal with what the person does, then the person will stop lying. He lies to get attention. He lies to avoid responsibility. He lies to get more people to think more of him or less of him or get something that he can't have otherwise. And if you deal only with what he does and not with what he lies about or what he says, then all that becomes meaningless. And he finally begins to tell the truth because the lies have no payoff. In other words, in reality therapy, you try as much as possible to eliminate the payoff. And the payoff is when you listen to a lie. That's a big payoff. Or when you say to the kid, "But kid, you're lying." That's a tremendous payoff then. And so you don't get into all that kind of stuff, you know. You say to him, "What?" Well, I wouldn't wait for a whole hour. I'd wait after about 3 minutes. I'd say, "Okay, but what are you going to do?" In other words, I don't. Well, but then you say, "Don't tell me about it. Show me. I'm not interested in hearing about it. Show me." I mean, if it's a child, let him show you. I mean, if you wanted to, if you know the kid and you'd like to role play him, I'll show you in 2 seconds. Not 2 seconds, but maybe 120 seconds how to handle it. I mean, isn't that hard to handle if you really want to find out? But I'm frustrated. What do you do? You know, you play the lion kid and tell me where he's lying, and I'll show you how to handle it. Remy, that's real easy. I mean, that's a cinch. Well, why don't you try it? Just kind of be fun to come up here and play a lion kid. I mean, I think it's a cinch. There you go. A lot of people dealing with a lot of liars here in the audience. Yeah. Yeah. We just kind of ease into it now. Here, can you get up here all right? It's a big step. Here, just give me your hand. There we go. Give you a hand here. Now, if you just pluck the microphone off that stand there, we'll just pull it out of the thing. It should be working. Just pull it straight up, or Harry will get it for you. Yeah. Sit down here and just give us just a little bit of a background of how old this child is and in what situation he would be lying or she would be lying, I don't know, whichever it is.
This is a juvenile delinquent.
Boy or girl?
Boy.
Uh-huh.
16.
Okay.
Has no home life.
And where would you be seeing him?
In the institution.
He's actually locked up in an institution?
Yes.
He's incarcerated there for a period of time,
yeah,
for some breaking the law in some way, running away or doing,
yes,
something like that.
Yes.
But not for murder or anything like,
no,
that. Okay, not okay.
Nonviolent crime.
Okay. Maybe a little stealing and things like that.
Basically, almost to get back into the institution.
Okay, that's his home. Life. All right. And what's the problem that would get you talking to him? I mean,
just a volunteer social worker to try and reach his child.
I see. In other words, you're just talking to him. What's his first name? Stanley or something like that? Yeah, any name.
We'll say Stanley.
Okay, that's fine.
Okay.
Well, Stanley, you know, I'm volunteered to work here, and how you doing? I'm going to talk to you for a little bit.
You got to do better than that.
I have to do better than talk to you? Well, that's all I got going is talking to you, but I'm going to spend a little time here, and I thought if you'd like to talk, maybe we could, I don't know, get to know each other. Sometimes it helps.
Why?
Why does it help?
Why do you want to talk to me?
Because I volunteered to come here and help out some of the kids here, and they assigned me you.
Oh.
So I'm going to talk to you.
Oh.
Now, if you don't want to talk to me, then just say go away, and I'll go away. This is not compulsory, but a lot of kids I talk to, we kind of work things out, enjoy it somewhat.
Well, what do you want to know from me?
Nothing. I want, you know, really, I don't want to know anything. I'd just like to know, what's on your mind? What are you thinking about?
Well, I'm thinking about getting a gun.
Mm-hmm. You a kind of person that uses guns a lot? Is that a gun's your thing?
I don't ask for anything. I take it.
Mm-hmm.
Person that has a gun can take anything.
I see. Well, that's true. If you got a gun and then you go up to a fellow without a gun, you can undoubtedly take what he has. I mean, I can't deny that. We see that in the TV every night, don't we? Now, is that what you want to do with your life? Be a gunman?
Well, I've used a knife. Somebody ran my mother down. Said nasty words to my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Waited. I got him in Woolworths.
Mm-hmm.
I took the gun. I took the knife. I put it right through his eye. Blood all came down.
No kidding.
It was a mess. Mm-hmm.
That's frightening.
Yeah.
Frightening. Well, what do you plan to do now? I mean, you haven't got any knives or guns. We're just sitting here today, and so I don't carry a gun or knife myself either.
Oh, I'm going to run away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
I've run away before.
Well, kids do that from here. They do run away, but they tend to come back. You know, how many times you been here?
Oh. A lot of times, but I'm not coming back.
Next time you go. Well, I don't think that'll bother the state too much. Costs a lot of money to keep you in here. If you can run away successfully, I suppose everybody'd be happy. Could I help you make a plan? You should have a plan. It's best when you run to have a plan, because otherwise you get picked up and dragged back, you know. It costs a lot of money.
No, last time I got away. I went out in the woods.
And you're not back yet?
No. I bought the wrong type of trousers, though. I bought those all-on trousers. Next time I'm going to get blue jeans. I had to go in the woods, and I had to steal some blue jeans,
mm-hmm.
and I stole them off the line. And then when I got there, I realized the fly was in the back. So I went back, but they didn't have any of the fly the right way around. So
girls' pants you stole.
Yeah, I got girls' pants.
Yeah.
I didn't want girls' pants.
Yeah.
I had to stay in girls' pants. So next time, I'm not going to buy those other things. I'm going to buy blue jeans.
Well, that sounds smart to me.
But they said they were going to let me out, you know.
They will eventually. All the kids get out of here.
Mm-hmm.
All the kids get out of here.
No, they stopped the pass now. I can't go out.
Oh, that's too bad.
I'm not going home. They're not allowing me to go home.
Well, gee, you know.
I beat another kid up. That's why they're not allowing me to go home.
They're rough around here, aren't they?
Now, let me
Sure. No, you can still talk through the thing.
Yeah. In this particular case, this child was going at one time to be allowed home.
Sure.
And I knew this, and I was convinced on this. But basically, I think from a fear of going home and what he would meet, he found every excuse that he was not going to go home.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent 1 hour telling me how he was not going to go home. Now, how would you convince him?
Well, that's all right. I mean, it's...
Would you agree with him that he was not going home? When you knew that he was, would you go along with that?
Well, I wouldn't get into it one way or another. I'd just say, Stanley, you know, you may go home and you may not. It's very hard for me to figure out from what you're saying. You know, there's a party that wants to go and a party that doesn't. And it's going to be up to you in the end. I just keep turning it to him and to his responsibility. In other words, I care what he says, but it doesn't manipulate me. I don't care that much, you know. But I'm trying to be friendly and warm, and I'll talk with him, get him to laugh a few times, and get him to feel maybe he's got a friend in me. But if he tells me about knifing and kidding and running and all these things, I mean, I listen to a limited extent, but I don't take it real serious. And bring him back to the present all the time.
Just basically...
I'm just trying to get friendly with him.
Yes, but if you feel that you have got friendly and that every time he gets emotionally unstable, he goes back to this profound line. This is when I... Sometimes there's just an element of truth in it.
I wouldn't worry about that. I wouldn't really worry about whether he's lying to me or not. I mean, he's locked up in an institution. What's the difference? He's not going anywhere. In other words, he has to build his ego in some way, and he's telling you his thing, and you listen to it, and okay, the point is that when he starts talking seriously about, well, these are the things I better start doing to get out of here, then you listen a little more closely. But it's not your job really as a psychiatrist, therapist, under any circumstances to be much of a DA to say, aha, that's a lie, aha, that's the truth. It doesn't make that much difference. You're just trying to be friendly with him and get him to know that, you know, you listen to him, and when he tells you less kind of funny stories, maybe you listen to them more, that's all.
Mm-hmm.
But some people say, well, my goodness, this child is lying to me. Well, so what? I mean, it's the best he can do. I have kind of a rule, it's maybe a crazy thing. I say everybody always tells the truth, which is even this kid in his own way is telling the truth, because that's all he can believe about himself. If he says anything else, it's too painful.
Well, part of his fantasy has been the only way I think he's kept sane.
Mm.
He has retreated.
Well, you can't take that away from him.
He realizes his fantasy.
Your job is to...
It isn't a retreat into complete fantasy.
It's protection.
But it is almost... he has no future and he has no past, and... he's got to have something to keep his sanity.
But if you, as the volunteer visitor, can get to be friends with him, that'll give him enough strength to begin to face reality a little better. So that's your only job, and it's a big job. And when I say only, I don't mean it's a small job. It's you're not putting him out of the institution. I mean, you're in a good position. You don't have any control over. You're just trying to be his friend.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can get that, he'll become stronger. And when he becomes stronger, he'll need to lie less. His lies are neither hurting him or helping him. They're just kind of his story. That's all. It's the way. It's not like he's stealing your money by lying to you or something like that. Getting you to sign a check. My mother's dying. I got to send her. You know, he's not conning you in any way. You're just with him. That's all. So don't worry about it. That's not where the problem is. The problem is he's a lonely kid with no friends. And if you can become his friend, he'll gain some strength.
Mm-hmm.
That's really,
so just sort
be
of
patient.
Accept the lies.
Accept them, but not buy them.
Accept
you understand
them,
what I mean?
But let him see that he's not manipulating
that's
them.
Right,
and you're
that's
not,
right.
You're not believing them.
Just like I said to him when you were playing him something, okay, you know, so, I know, but we don't have any guns or knives here now, so let's go on. In other words, just kind of telling him that that's not where it's at right now. But if you get all upset, my God, this kid stuck a knife in something and blood ran out of his eye. Oh. My God, what kind of a kid this is? Why, he'll build lies up to the sky.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's what he's looking for, is someone to do this. Okay, well, I mean, that's what I say. It's not a big deal. All righty. Here, we'll just put this down here. Now, here, we wanted to role play another. This gentleman over here. Were you the man who was going to play a? Oh yeah, why don't you come up now? This is similar since many of the problems you'll deal with are young people in this age bracket. I thought we'd handle a few of those today. Take some of the more exotic things tomorrow. Tell us a little bit about the problem. You know, a tiny bit.
All right. Well, I'm in a group. And my name is Ralph, and I had to come here because my vocational rehab counselor said I had to come here. And I'm here because I dropped out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to get my GED.
Mm-hmm. How old are you, about 18?
I'm 16, and if I had to go to school, I'd just be in the seventh grade, and I didn't want to go to school with a bunch of little kids.
Mm-hmm.
But two things I want. I don't want to go back to jail, and I want to get my GED.
All right, fine. And do you live at home?
No, I have an apartment of my own.
How do you pay the rent?
My mother pays it.
Okay, well, that's interesting, but... all right, well, let's just take it from there. Now, we can't simulate the whole group, but we'll just pretend I'm counseling with you by yourself, that's
okay,
all.
Okay, fine.
And what's your name, first name? Just give any name.
I said my name is Ralph. My real
Ralph?
Name is Frank, yeah. But
Ralph.
My
you said Ralph. Okay, I missed that. I'm sorry.
Ralph, but that's a fictitious name.
That's fine.
Somebody may know this guy.
That's okay. Now, well, Ralph, let me get straight now. You've been sent here to me.
Yeah.
I'm the vocational rehab counselor.
That's right.
Why'd they send you here, Ralph, so I understand the picture?
I don't know.
You have no idea?
No, I've got to come here. I may not get my GED. If I don't keep coming here, I'll have to go back to jail, and I don't want to go back to jail.
Well, that's a good reason to come here.
Right.
Now, why would they send you back to jail? What kind of crimes have you committed?
Oh, I just shot a little dope, and that doesn't hurt anybody.
But it's against the law, though. It's against the law, especially when they catch you.
Yeah, I know. Well, they caught me.
They caught you.
But it shouldn't be against the law, because dope doesn't hurt anybody.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, there's people that figure jail doesn't hurt anybody either. You know, it just depends how you look at it. But, you know, you don't like being in jail.
No, I don't.
So you got to kind of make a choice. Do I want to keep shooting dope or do I want to sit in jail? You know, it's up to you. It's immaterial to me. Which would you rather do?
Well, I'll quit shooting dope at any time when I think anybody might catch me.
That's a good idea. That's fine. So if you do that, could you stay out of jail then? If you're not caught shooting dope, can you stay out of jail? Or is there any other reason they'd put you in jail?
That's the only reason I've been put in jail so far. I cheat a lot in school.
They're not going to put you in jail for that.
Oh,
my
no.
God, no. That would be a terrible situation.
No, they won't.
So, dope I can understand, but cheating in school, the most they'll do is throw you out of school.
I don't understand why they put you in jail for dope. I think the whole society's crazy because dope doesn't hurt you.
Yeah, it could be, but they still put you in jail for it, and you know, they're running the jails. And
yeah.
I mean, if you ever get to be the president of the United States, maybe you could pass a law against it. You might have a lot of people support it. I don't know. But right now, 16.
They got me now.
They have you. That's right. But you still have a choice to shoot or not to shoot.
Right.
So
I haven't been shooting recently.
You figure out what to do, and that's it. So whether you go to jail or not, I couldn't do anything about that, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not going to put you in jail. As long as you don't shoot dope right in front of me, I'm not going to put you in jail. Can you refrain from shooting it in front of me?
Thanks.
Okay, that's it then.
Okay.
Now, what else do you want?
I don't want anything. I don't know why I have to come here. I'm happy with my life. I like the way I live. I'm getting along fine.
But you said you wanted a GED. What do you want that for? If you're happy with your life, what do you want to hassle that? A lot of tests, a lot of work, a lot of reading.
Sometimes I wonder why I want it. I don't know.
Well,
exactly
you must have had a reason. You must have had a reason at one time. Yeah. Was it to help you get a job? Sometimes without a high school diploma, it's hard to get work.
Yeah, I guess I'll need a job. As soon as my mother stops supporting me, I'll need a job.
And how old is she?
Huh?
How old is your mother?
My mother's 39.
Mm-hmm. Well, she in pretty good health.
Yeah.
How come she supports you? How come she supports you?
She figures I can't support myself, that I can't get a job.
I mean, how come you don't live at home? It's unusual for a 16-year-old to be living away from home.
Oh, I don't like to live with her, and I don't like to live with my two little brothers.
I see you.
We always get in arguments.
Your mother figures there's less hassle with you out of the house, huh?
That's right. She likes it a lot better that way, and I like it a lot better that way. And the thing is, she's always, every time I want to go somewhere, I say, Mother, take me where I'm supposed to go. I'm supposed to be there at 3 o'clock. And she says, okay, I'll get you there at 3 o'clock. And then 3:15 comes, and she's not ready to go yet. She has to do one more thing.
How do you get places on your own without your mother?
Oh, I have a friend who has a motorcycle.
You can ride on the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right on the back, sometime a hitchhike.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about buying a little motorbike. There's a motorbike you can buy, and you can get 165 miles per gallon.
Yeah, that's true. All right.
I'm thinking about getting one of those.
Where would you get the money?
My mother gives me money.
For a motorbike, too?
Yeah, if I'd save for a long time, she'd give it.
I see. In other words, you'd have to save it up out of what she gives.
Yeah, she pays my rent, and she gives me $20 a week above my room and board costs.
Well, how did you get to the vocational rehabilitation? How did you get into there?
Well, it was either that or stay in jail.
Oh, they gave you that choice, huh?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And that's how you got here then, huh?
That's right. I have to come.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you want us to help you plan to get the GED? We can work on that. We have night school classes.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to come to night school?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
And that doesn't have all the hassle of day school, you know. It's mm-hmm. You just come
right.
And
mm-hmm.
If you can work that out, can you read?
Yeah, I don't like to read. I don't like to read in front of people. Makes me nervous.
Okay, but you can read, like.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh yeah, I can read.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And can you do a little mathematics, add, subtract, that kind
right.
of stuff?
Mm-hmm. I can do some of that.
Well, you come to night school, then we'll see how you do. I mean, I think the purpose of vocational rehabilitation, the way I work at, and the way I work here, is to help a person get work so mm-hmm. they can take care of themselves.
Yeah.
Now, do you want to get a job? 16-year-olds do work.
Well, not as long as mother will take care of me.
Mm-hmm.
I know I'll have to sometime, though. I would like to get the GED by then, you know, by the time I have to start taking care of myself.
Well, you figure your mother might turn this off when you're 18 or something like that, huh?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess she
Because she has other brothers coming up. Maybe she'll have to, you know, spend a little more on them and things.
Yeah.
Is your mother a well-to-do woman?
Yeah, my daddy was a psychiatrist.
I see. You mean they're divorced, or is your daddy dead, or what?
No, he drank himself to death.
I see. Yeah. But he must have left some money then, huh?
Yeah, mother always seems to have enough.
Mm-hmm.
Her boyfriend has a lot, too.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that from what you tell me, if you come to night school regularly and you don't shoot dope and get caught, I think you could stay out of jail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, there is one thing I need some help with, too. I have friends who come by, and not long ago a friend came by, and he dropped some marijuana seeds in my apartment. And now I've got to go answer. I've got to go to court next week because he dropped some marijuana seeds. And one thing I have trouble with...
You mean the sheriff came to your apartment and scraped the rug or something like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. My apartment gets raided from time to time. I don't know why they pick on me. I don't know why they pick on me, but they raided my apartment.
Well, if they find marijuana seeds in your apartment, man, you know, you're in big trouble. You'll end up in the boys' reformatorium.
Yeah, I know it. And I have an awful hard time telling them not to bring their marijuana seeds to my apartment. You know, one guy came and stole a stereo from me when I was asleep.
Those are your friends.
Yeah.
I think you ought to be looking for a new class of friends, it seems to me. Well, you know which guy stole it?
I have an idea which one stole it. But it's awful hard for me to say. I was always taught to be real nice, and it's hard for me to say anything unpleasant to one of my friends.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could say pleasantly not to steal your sets and not to drop marijuana seeds in your apartment. It would seem to me you could do it pleasantly, but because, you know, you're not going to be in that apartment very long if they're going to find dope in there.
Yeah.
I mean, marijuana may be not as bad as some other things, but...
Well, I'm going to tell the judge that this other guy brought the stuff in. You're
going to give the judge his name?
Am I going to tell the judge his name?
Mm-hmm.
Golly.
The judge may ask that. I mean, you know, if it's just a kind of a nameless friend, the judge might be less interested. But if you give the name and they send the sheriff out to scrape his rug and they find marijuana... The sheriffs around here, they got a lot of time. They can scrape rugs. It's probably very little crime in the area.
I'm going to try to give the judge his name. I'm not sure I'll do it or not, but I think that'd probably be the best thing.
Well, the judge will pay more attention to you if you give the name than if you don't. But that's, again, up to you. You see, all I can do for you here is either counsel you toward getting your high school diploma, for which I can offer you the little preparatory course at night school, or if you're seriously interested in going to work, we could talk about what jobs are available.
I'll talk about that in 2 years.
But staying out of jail, well, that's pretty much your problem. But if you could at least tell the judge if you're picked up that you're in a GED program, this probably would help.
Mm-hmm.
And if you attend the program regularly, and the judge calls me, because you could give him my name, you know, and he calls me and says, is Ralph showing up regularly to the program? And if you were, I'd say yes.
Yeah.
And if you weren't, I'd say no.
Okay, well, that gives me more reason to come here, because really I get bored when I come here.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that,
well, you don't have to spend a lot of time talking to me. I mean, you know, we could talk whenever you want to. I'm not anxious to talk to you. It's my job doesn't depend upon talking to you, you know. On the other hand, if you got something on your mind you'd like to talk about, just feel free to drop in. But, you know, let's work out this program where you can go to class. And if your mother will pay your bills and you can stay out of jail, this could work out.
Mm-hmm.
Any other problems?
No, that's just fine. I'm doing great.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you know, it all depends how you look at it. But you understand that it's your choice as to whether or not you get into serious trouble. I just won't want you to leave here without understanding that if you continue to fuss with dope and you get caught.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I know, you just like you said, maybe I can get to be president and change everything, but I wouldn't be in all this trouble if the society wasn't so screwed up.
Probably not. Probably not. But, you know, that's the way it is. And, I mean, you could tell the judge the same thing, that you don't believe in the law. And, he might listen to you, he might not. It all depends.
I'm not going to tell you that.
No? You wouldn't tell that to the judge, just to a counselor, huh?
No,
well, I think that's probably a good move. I feel it. I think when you're in the judge, my feeling, I haven't been in court much, but I just say, yes, Your Honor, or no, Your Honor, or thank you, Your Honor. Those are the only three words I ever use in there. And it does, the judge is kind of like that. I mean, I'll give you that extra, you know.
Have you ever been in jail?
No, I never been in jail, but I've been in court.
Oh, and that's where you learned what...
Oh, yeah, I've been in court quite a few times, and not for criminal offense, but on various cases I had to act as a witness and things, and it's very good to be polite.
You weren't accused of anything?
No. If you go into court, and you're polite, and you tell the truth... And if the truth isn't too hard on you, it can sometimes come out all right.
Yeah, but you don't know what it's like, because, see, I was accused. You were just there to do all these other things. I was accused. You know
it's like. I agree with you. I don't have any idea really what it's like. It must be a lot rougher when you're sitting there and they're saying, found marijuana seeds and found things and, it's best if you're not there. That's the way it would seem to me.
Yeah, I'd rather not be there.
But if you can tell the judge that you're involved in a program and attending it regularly, there's sometimes, even if you get to court, there's sometimes a chance that you might, if it's not too serious, still avoid jail.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think he'll listen, but what you do say makes sense. Well, it's better than getting in there.
Now, if you really don't mind going to jail, then, of course, that's your choice.
No, I don't want
but, I mean, it seems to me if you got a mother... That's got the dough to pay for an apartment and give you $20 a week besides. But that's a heck of a lot better than jail.
It's better. I got a good deal.
But if you blow the deal...
I don't want to do that.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good to me. Why don't we get started in this program, and then why don't I just maybe talk to you one more time to see how things are going, just to see that you get started next week, okay? And then after that, we'll just kind of play it by ear.
Okay, fine.
Okay, good. Thank you. Thank you for coming. Okay. Are there any questions about either of those role plays? Oh, well, it was just we kind of did step one, just trying to be friendly with them and honest with them. Honesty is a very important part of step one. I was very honest with him throughout that if he got in trouble, that's it. Step two, I got into a little bit of what he was doing. And step three, we got him to decide that maybe he should be a little more careful. And the only contract I really got going with him, and that was about all we got to, was, and no excuses, I didn't go through the law a bit, was, will you make an arrangement to go here? And offered it to him, and he thought it would be a good idea. That's about all we got, but that wasn't, it was more than nothing, it was something, and I emphasize the fact that even if he got into future trouble, the fact that he was trying to get his GED would serve him in good stead to kind of lock the thing up, to give him more of a reason. We're working against a wedge. The kid had been in jail, but if you got it, that's okay. See, I didn't put him in jail. And I'm honestly trying to keep him out of jail, but I'm not going to do more than I can do. I'm not going to say to him, look, kid, you come here and you'll never go to jail, because that is not true. If he gets busted with drugs, he's going to go to jail. Evidently, wherever he is, that's what they do. But that's, in a sense, I was sticking pretty much to the first four steps, which is mostly what you do in reality therapy, and we got a little bit into step six. There was no punishment. There was no way I was punitive to this kid at all. I'm quite friendly with him. He seemed like a nice kid. You want to role play someone, is that it? Okay, well, they're evidently got a little coffee, and many people here in a state of petrifaction here might enjoy a little hot coffee. So why don't we come back in about 15 minutes or so, and then we'll take a chance at it. Could you just give me a little background into this deal here?
Okay, this is a former drug addict, heroin user, really heavy. Mm-hmm. Been through a program, one treatment facility. He's out of that treatment facility. He's into another treatment facility. And It's all in the same program, you know, the treatment facility.
Is this a locked-up facility?
No, it's not a locked-up facility. It's a halfway house.
And is he working in the community, or?
He's working in the community. He's training to be a manager of a Winn-Dixie store.
Uh-huh, right. How old a man is he?
He's 24 years old.
Intelligent man?
Very intelligent, 3 years of college.
Right, okay. And what's the situation, and who would I be playing?
Okay, situation is you're going to confront him about, from what you heard from the rest of the residents who've seen him shoot up actually with their own eyes, you're going to confront him since you're the manager of the facility.
Okay, that's fine. Now, because I don't understand your facility totally and everything.
Okay, it's basically a halfway house.
I understand that, but when I confront him, what's my thing, you know? Am I going to threaten to throw him out or what?
Okay, yeah, you may threaten to throw him out.
Am I going to turn him over to the police?
What do you want to do? You know, it's up to you. You're the manager of the facility, and it's left up to you entirely.
Oh, okay. In other words, I can make up my own mind.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. And what's his first name? Just throw a name out.
It's Richard.
Richard, all right. Okay. And I'll call him into my office.
Right.
Okay. Richard, you know I called you in here. Do you have any idea what it's about?
Nah, man.
Well, let me tell you what it's about, because to me it's very serious.
Everything's serious to you. Every time I see you, everything's serious, you know?
Well, that's right. You're getting the idea.
Yeah. What you want this time, man?
Well, I've been talking to the other people here, and they told me that they saw with their own eyes that you've been shooting up.
They ain't saw nothing. They ain't saw me doing nothing, man. What you mean?
That's what they told me.
They told you. They told you. Who told you?
Well, I'll give you the names. I was told by John, Tom, Jack, and Susan.
Hey, man, well, I'm calling you Tom, Jack, and Susan, all of them telling a lie. Now, who you going to believe, me or them?
Them.
Them? Man, that means... Well,
if I believed you, I wouldn't have you in here, you see.
Right. So you had your mind made up before I even come in here then, right?
That's right.
Yeah, so you saying I'm using drugs, definitely, huh? You know that, huh? You know that for a fact.
You want to take a urine test today?
I'll take a urine test, man. I'll take anything, man.
You will?
Yeah.
All right. Well, then here's a cup right now. You fill it up.
Well,
we going to take it to the state lab? I want to see you do it in front of my own eyes, you know.
Well, hey, man, you ever see me turn my back when I pee in the bottle? You ain't never seen me tell me. You can come on to the bathroom with me and I'll pee in the bathroom.
No, we can do it right here.
No, I don't want to pee in your office because I might be peeing too much and run over in the bathroom. Come on in the bathroom. Come on in the bathroom, man. You know, I'll pee in your bottle.
All right.
You going to kick me out. If it come back dirty, you going to kick me out?
Did I say that?
I don't know what you said, man.
All I said.
You called me in here. What you called me in here for if you wasn't going to kick me out? You don't care nothing about me. You don't care nothing about me, man. You know? You don't know what I'm going through with. You don't even know why I had to. You know, if I did go out there and do something, you don't even know why I had to do it. You know, so why you sitting up here? Why you call me in here anyway? You know?
Because I heard you were shooting up from Jim, Tom, John, and Susan.
Well, they
and
all
I
lying,
believed them.
Man. They all lying.
And if we get a urine test, it's
going
to come out positive.
The urine will come back.
It'll come back positive. So let's not bother with it, all right?
All right, solid. You know.
Because we don't want to hassle you too much.
Right on.
What we want to do is figure out what to do.
Right. If that urine come back, then you don't know them, right?
No, I know you're using. I just don't want to spend the state's
you
money on the test.
You see me using, man? You see me using? You don't know nothing. You're just assuming.
Right.
Right. So you don't know, right?
Right.
Right. All right. There you go. You don't know. You're just assuming. You're going by what them other people say.
And
I'm going to deal with them when I get out of here, too.
I understand that.
I'm going to deal with them.
Right.
Rats.
They're terrified of you. Yeah.
They better be.
Oh, yeah. They're scared of death. Yeah. They're really scared. Yeah. But in the meantime, since you're using, we got to figure something out.
Yeah. Okay. You figure something out since you're so aware that I'm using. You figure something out. I know what I'm doing. You know? I know what I'm doing.
Well, I want to ask you a question.
What?
are you going to keep using? Because if you are, you can't stay here. If you're not, you can. That's the question.
Hey, man, I'm staying here, which means I ain't using nothing. You understand? You know, you ain't hearing me. I'm here because I ain't using nothing. You know?
Then you're not going to be here very long.
Well, hey, man, if I ain't using nothing and you're going to put me out of the house, then that tells me you don't care nothing about me, man. You don't care nothing about me.
Yeah, so what?
So, hey, why am I here?
That's what I'm asking
you. I'm leaving, man.
If you're using...
I'm going to just leave.
Well, you know, you're not in a... This is not a lockup.
I know it.
But we got you some things going. We got you that training program down at the Winn-Dixie store, and you're doing well down there. You know, a user doesn't necessarily do badly.
Hey, man, y'all.
But if you keep using, you're going to screw yourself.
Y'all
up.
Ain't got me nothing. I got it on my own. You understand? I got that on my own because I qualified for it. You know? I qualified for it. Y'all gave me a lot of stuff at the other facility to learn how to relate to people, you know, and that's how I got that job. I'm over here at the halfway house just staying, you know, because I didn't have no other house to stay out there in. Now, here you come up here telling me to come into the office because you heard I was using drugs, man, and I don't dig that. You understand? Yeah? I don't dig that.
Well, I didn't ask you whether you dug it or not. I mean, that's not a point. It's not a question whether you dug it.
You don't care nothing about the way I feel, huh?
We got a house here, and the people in here, they don't use drugs.
Hey, right. We don't use drugs.
Right.
Right. We don't use no drugs. Man. I've been telling everybody here not to use no drugs, man.
Well, that's good. We do appreciate that.
Like everybody. Thank you.
But the people that you've been telling, they got a little bit ticked off because you're using, see, and they told me about it, and they said that...
Oh,
I'll
deal with them.
You got
they're
it.
Lying on me.
You
I'll
got
deal
it.
With them.
You got it that they're your enemies, but that's not true. They care for you.
And if they cared for me, they know I'll probably get kicked out of the house, you know.
They said to me before they told me, they say, will you listen to me a minute? Just for a minute.
Okay, I'll listen to you for a minute. You got
good.
A minute.
Well, a minute is plenty.
All right.
They told me, and let me check my watch here. All right. They told me that there was a guy in the house using. And I said, I suspect there is. You know, we got 18 people living here.
Yeah.
And I said, who is it? And they said, they're not going to say because I'm going to kick him out.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I want to find out who it is. I want to talk to him. I promise you I won't kick him out.
Oh, so you ain't going to kick me out even if I do admit it, huh?
I said I wouldn't kick you out immediately.
Oh, hey, change, you change, man. You just changed, man. You lied to me.
Now, you're going to give me a whole minute. I've only had
okay, go
25,
ahead.
30
go ahead.
Seconds
go ahead,
here.
Man.
I told them I wouldn't kick you out immediately. I'd see if we could work it out. And they said, okay, then it's Richard. And I said, well, I couldn't believe it's Richard. He's doing so well. He's on his Winn-Dixie job. And they said, no, they saw you with their own eyes shooting up on four occasions.
Yeah.
And so I said, okay, I'll talk to Richard about it, and that's where we are. That's it, 1 minute. That's
yeah,
where we
right.
are.
It's 1 minute. You're right on time.
Yeah, that's what I try to do.
Okay, well, I'll tell you, man, you know, since you ain't going to kick me out immediately because maybe I'll go out and find me another place to stay, you know, I ain't using no drugs. You understand?
No, we know you're using drugs. We're just
what
not going to take
know?
A urine
hey, now, I'm telling you, I don't care.
When you want to go through all the hassle of a urine test?
Hey, I'll pee in a bottle. What's peeing in a bottle, man? I ain't got no reason to sit here and tell you no lie. I'm just as big as you is, you know. You don't scare me, you know.
I'll
pee in a bottle.
I don't want to scare you.
Well, you know, I don't want
I want you to say to
you
me.
You are scaring me, you know.
I want you to say to me that... You got some idea how we can work this out?
I got some idea how we can work this out.
Mm-hmm.
Drop it. Forget it.
No,
you know,
I'm not
going to
do
forget
that.
Forget all of it. But that's my idea, man. You know,
I want a better idea than that one.
All right, a better idea than that is let's call all them people in here and ask them when, where, and at what time they saw me using drugs.
I got
you
that
know?
All on this piece of paper right here.
bring them in here,
when,
man.
Where
in
the
here.
Time? And there's their names at the bottom.
No, but
all
I want
signed.
You to bring them in here, you know.
Well, we'll do that later. We'll do that. We'll do
all
that.
All right, we'll do that.
We'll do that. Mm-hmm. This is going to be done, but let's assume that they don't change their story.
Yeah, but let's assume they do change their story.
Well, I'm going to go under the assumption that they don't, and then what I want to find out is, do you want to stop using and stay here, or don't you? That's the simple question. That's the simple question. Otherwise, I'm going to have to say goodbye to you. I appreciate knowing you, but I'm going to have to say goodbye.
And now you're going to kick me out.
That's right.
Oh, you ain't going to wait for no, you ain't going to give me no immediate nothing if you do find out I'm using drugs. You just lying back and forth, man. First you say you're going to give me something immediately to do something with, and now you're saying you're going to kick me out if you find out I was doing it.
I'm saying that unless you come up with a plan to stop using drugs starting as of this moment, 4:45, November 19th, 1974, that you're going to have to leave.
Solid, man. Then I got a dirty urine. I took some drugs yesterday, and I ain't going to use no more today. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Sit down, sit down.
Wait a minute, Mom.
Sit down.
All right.
That's good. You're not going to use any more.
I ain't going to use no more drugs as of right now.
That's good. That's good.
Solid.
How do you plan to do that?
Well, what I'm going to do when I start getting up tight.
Now, you said you had a problem, and you said, I don't want to hear about the problem. Now I'd like to hear about the problem.
Oh, man.
Because you said I wouldn't listen to the problem or anything.
But then you ain't going to kick me out of the house, right? If I, you know, now that I told you, right?
You're going to sleep here tonight.
Hey, man, you lied. You lied.
Just tell me what the problem is. Maybe I could help you with it.
Right.
Don't tell me I'm a liar, because I never claim to tell the truth.
Oh, oh. All right, I'll tell you the problem.
Right.
You know, what I've been dealing with lately, man, is my wife, you know.
Yeah, that's
that wife of mine, man. She's terrible, you know. Like, she's pregnant, you know, and that's really blowing my mind, man, you know. Like, I don't think it's my kid, you know. Because, like, you know, I ain't never messed with her, you know. And, like, she said, it's my kid, man.
Well, why don't you get a divorce from your wife? That's easy to get.
Well, I just got, hey, man, she going to have a baby before I can get the divorce, you know, because she done moved from town, see, and I can't get that lawyer. I done talked to a lawyer all about it, man, and I can't find her. Huh?
You can't find her?
I can't find her nowhere. She skipped town, you know.
Well, if she skipped town, then what are you worried about?
I'm worried that she going to come back, man, and won't we pay that money? You know, now she know I got, when she find out I got a good job, she going to come back and try to rip me off, you know. She got the car.
What's the lawyer say?
Well, the lawyer said he can't serve papers on her because she's not in the state, you know.
Well, as soon as she comes back, wham.
Hey, well, that ain't nothing. You have to wait 30 days, I'm going to say 20 days before the hearing comes up. In the
maybe
meantime,
the
only thing she had
back
to do is just file for support and all that good stuff, man. I done checked it all out, man. The lawyer know. You know, that lawyer know all about it, man, you know.
But right now she's gone.
Yeah, man, she got me. She's gone. Yeah, you're right. She's gone, right. But hey, man, when she come back, she ain't going to rip me off, you know. She's going to rip me
not
off.
Not if you got a lawyer.
Well, her people got money, and they got a lawyer. And her lawyer done contacted my
her
lawyer.
Her people will be so happy when she's divorced from you, because her people have been calling me every day saying there's some goddamn... I think, frankly, I could get a few bucks out of her people if you'd divorce her. They say if that juice that even shows up anywhere in the area, they're going to blow your head off. Your old man's got a shotgun.
They ain't going to do that. How can an old man say that when I... You know why he got a shotgun? Because I smacked him, the last time we were together. That's
I'd stay away
shotgun
from him.
You know, I ain't scared of him.
But they
shotgun
got money, and I'll tell you.
Yeah, they got money. That's when they got a lawyer, man. See, they're going to try to hang me, see?
No, they just want to get rid of you.
Well, I'm going to tell you, see, ain't nobody been helping me. Ain't nobody been helping me, man, you know.
Well, that...
Like, I can't hardly ever talk to you, you know.
We're talking today.
Yeah, well, that's my problem, man, you know. I like to keep on talking to you sometimes, you know, about that. Yeah.
But what are we going to do now about this this thing here? Are you going to keep, if you spend your money on heroin,
You know, that's not a smart way to spend your money.
Yeah, well,
If you spent a little of that heroin money on a lawyer, man, you could get the Supreme Court.
You told me about 3 minutes ago that, you know, as of right now, you know, you weren't going to, kick me out of the house if I don't use any more drugs and stuff. And I promise you,
You start telling me your problem.
Yeah, I'll take a urine every day in front of you, you know, to guarantee you that I ain't gonna take no more.
I got no patience for that.
Well, you know, hey man, you gonna kick me out of the house?
I wanna know about this money you're spending.
Well, I ain't got two paychecks since I've been working, man.
You know, it's
cheap
to live here.
I had to give me some clothes, you know.
It's cheap to live here, and, you're spending all your money on...
Hey, man, I ain't got no clothes when I came in here. I ain't wearing no jeans like no hippie. Yeah? I ain't gonna be no hippie. I'm gonna buy me some clothes, some nice shoes. And I need another pair of shoes. Nah, my shoes got a hole in it. Yeah? Look at these pants. I need another pair of pants.
How come you're so, what are we doing? What's wrong?
Well, hey, man... If you don't dig the way I talk, then hey, that's tough, you know.
Well, it didn't sound friendly.
Well, hey, you know, that's the way I relate. You don't sound friendly to me, you know, with that way you rap, you know. But I get along with you. I like you, you know.
Well, that's good. Well, if that's the way you talk, if that's the way you talk, okay.
Oh,
I just
fine. Hey, why are you jumping on the way I talk, man?
Well, because it doesn't sound friendly.
I've been talking like this for about 5 years, and you're the first person to tell me that don't sound friendly. And I got a lot of friends out there in the world. You know, I'm wondering if you're my friend or if you're somebody else. You know?
Well, if that's how you talk, it's okay.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
So what else besides your wife is hassling you? Because she's gone now.
Well...
your girlfriend, huh?
Yeah, that girlfriend of mine.
Your girlfriend shoot up?
Nah, she don't shoot up, man, but she uses a lot of other things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
She snort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she snort skag, you know.
Mm, well, she can go a little crazy on you then.
I tried to tell a man that when she, you know, she snort skag, that ain't gonna do nothing but make her inside of her nose real, you know, real.
She'll end up with one nostril, that's all.
No, hey man, when you do a two-way hit, you suppose, you know, one-on-one is, you know, she's doing them both of them. She ain't gonna have no nostrils at all.
Right.
You know, I know about that, man. I was trying to tell her she don't wanna hear that. You know, I can't do nothing about it.
You can do one thing about it.
I could beat her ass, right. I could beat her ass. You know. Man, I don't want to be beating on my girl,
you
man.
You could find another girl.
Hey, man, I love that girl. Wait a minute. Now, you going to tell me who I want to talk to?
Well, it just seems to me that, you know, you're a pretty attractive guy. You could find a girl that had more sense.
Hey, man,
sense.
I know I look good. You don't have to tell me that. I know that. You know I look good.
But, I mean, you wanna spend your life with a girl that's got only one nostril?
Or no nostril. Okay.
She's gonna end up with a hole right in the middle of her nose.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, you're right.
That stuff, it's all going to drop off.
Yeah, man,
off.
What about her, man? I want some help for her. You know, I don't want to just leave her, man, you know.
Well,
I don't like just, I've been trying to help the girl, and what's been happening, she's been dragging me down with her. That's what's been happening, because I don't know how to deal with that kind of thing, you know.
I know that.
You know, I try to tell her everything
but you do
I
like
learned,
her.
Man.
You do like her.
Huh?
You do like her.
Yeah, man, you know, I like the girl.
When she's not snorting, she's all right.
Well, yeah.
Does she work?
Yeah, she work.
Mm-hmm.
She work, yeah. But that's about all she do. She just work and come home and snort, man. She won't even go to bed with me no more. Yeah.
That's the problem with those sniffers, you know.
Man. You know, man, you just don't know how horny I've been lately, you know. You just don't know. Like, I go over there, you know.
That's
you,
bullshit.
Hey, man, when you, hey. Hey, man.
You've been shooting up. You can't even get it up. You know that.
Hey, man.
You know that.
Hey, man. Now, you ever use any?
So I thinking, you know, maybe.
Wait a minute, but have you ever used any?
Have I ever used
any? Yeah, you ever used any?
No, I haven't.
Well, then you don't know. Because I can get a hard on any time. Even with that in my sister's mind.
Maybe you can, but.
Oh, I can. I know I can. I done proved it. You want to ask the girl? You know? Why don't you call her? You know? But the thing is, she don't want to do nothing. Because
okay,
it's got her
okay.
down.
Yeah, it's
she
the same thing.
Right on. She don't get up.
Right, right. It's the same thing.
So let's not, you know, it ain't me, it's her. Now, I want some help for her, man. Would you talk to her?
Sure.
Can I bring her in so she can talk to you?
Well, if you can make it in here for another week or so, I could talk to her.
Okay, what do you mean by if I can make it now? What does that mean now?
That means today is Thursday.
Yeah.
And next Thursday, we're going to give you a urine test.
Okay, solid.
Next Thursday. Yeah. And if you're positive, we're going to say goodbye.
Solid, man. I can live with that.
And if you're not positive, then maybe you can bring the girl in and we'll talk.
But you're going to get that urine Thursday, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, solid.
Oh, I'll tell you about it. I'm not going to surprise it.
Oh, hey, man.
No, I'll tell you. We'll take it Thursday at noon.
Cool.
So.
Would you really take that urine Thursday?
Oh, yeah. In other words, if you're shooting up, you're not going to stop shooting up just because we're taking a urine test on Thursday. You just don't have that kind of control. If you did, you'd stop shooting up.
Hey, man, either you don't know nothing about a junkie or the junkie done showing up late and run on you. Because, like, hey, man.
You run it on me. That's fine.
Yeah, I can run it right over you.
That's okay.
I can get around that, really, you know.
Fine.
If I wanted to, if you're going to take a urine on Thursday, I could very easily put a bag up under my arm, you know, or either, hey, I can shoot up like that Tuesday, and the shit's going out of my system by that Thursday. You know, you tell me you're going to sit here and tell me when you're going to take a urine, man?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you really trust me, don't you?
I'm trying to.
Oh, man, that makes me feel real good, man. If somebody can trust me, you know, really. I think I'd go ahead on and use drugs, man. I'm going to go ahead on and shoot up.
Well, that's up to you. If the urine's positive on Thursday, you're out.
Okay.
And if you shoot up, it's going to be positive.
But I want you to talk to that girl.
Well, are you going to stay clean?
Yeah, I'll stay clean.
I mean, who's this important to me or you?
It's important to me, but I got a lot of other things that's important to me, too.
I know. You got to sort things out, which is important.
Yeah. You know, right now you got me so confused, man. I don't even know where I'm thinking, you know.
No, you know where you're thinking, but for the first time you were seriously considering staying clean for a week. And that's got you confused.
Yeah, because ain't nobody never trusted me, you know. Like, man, I could really get over on you, man. You telling me, sitting here telling me about
Thursday.
What do
you mean get
Thursday?
Over on me?
I mean, I could get over, man. I could do my thing, you know.
I mean, so what was the sense of that? Who are you kidding?
But I ain't kidding nobody.
Am I going to lose money because you're clean on Thursday? Or make money because you're dirty on Thursday?
Yeah, that's right. You draw a salary. You don't get paid by the number of people in there.
That's right. Yeah. The point is that you've been doing pretty good here. That's why those folks came in and told me. If you were just doing lousy, they wouldn't have said anything. But they thought you couldn't make it. You got a good job.
That's another thing. I got feelings about them folks out there, man. You know, like, they rats, really. You know, they don't.
Not those four.
Hey, man,
they're the best friends you got.
They didn't say nothing to me, man. They went behind my back. You know, I think I should, you know, go out
there
and
confront them. They made sure I wouldn't throw you out, which I'm not doing.
Okay. That's what I wanted to hear from
you. And I've told you that if you're clean next Thursday, you're still okay. And I've told you the day. I've told you the time. And I know you're smart enough to get around that if you want to take drugs, but I think you've got more sense than that. That's all I'm hoping you do.
Yeah. That made me feel good, man.
Well, I'm trying to make you feel good.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to make you feel bad. Why should I? But, I mean, you know, God, let's look at the plus side here. Let's forget the wife and the girlfriend with all the trouble. I mean, that may be a little on the minus side. But the plus side is that you went in the other institution. You came here. You got cleaned up a little bit. You got that job. I hear from the people down there you're doing a good job. You enjoy working down there, don't you?
Yeah.
So I'm looking at the plus side. And I think these people that told me about you, I think they are your friends.
Hey, man, but they didn't tell me nothing about it, you know. Like
well, because they figured that you'd blow up and you'd just grow your stack. That's what
yeah,
they
I probably
figured.
Would.
Yeah.
I
and
probably
they didn't want to hassle that, so they told me, but they made me promise I wouldn't throw you out, which I wouldn't.
Did they also make you promise that I wouldn't come out there and confront them?
No, they said that's okay.
Well, I like to do that then.
That's okay. That's
yeah.
okay. That's
I like
okay.
to go out there and I like to go out there
in
and beat
fact, they, I think
I like
they
to
got
go out there and beat them to death.
No,
really.
I think what they did is they bought some beer, and when you confront them, they're going to offer you a beer.
No, I don't know. I don't drink beer, man. I can't drink beer.
Well,
I got
then they'll drink it for you. That's all right. it won't go to waste, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, well, they can get into that alcohol bag, you know, because I don't choose to get in no alcohol bag,
yeah,
you know, like
good.
The rest of them.
That's good. Now, so we're all set.
Yeah, we all set. You going to talk to my girl?
Well, you're going to, the thing is you got to do what you're doing, and next Thursday I'm going to give you a test. I may not give you a test next Thursday.
Yeah.
If everybody says you've been clean, I ain't going to bother.
Well, right now, man, I'd be willing to give a urine every day.
Well, what do we want to spend all that money for?
That is a lot of money, ain't it?
Yeah, it's about $3 a day. That's, you know, $21 a week. Who needs that? That's a lot of bread. I'd just ask a few questions around. Everybody says Richard's clean. That's good enough for me.
Solid, man. That's right on. I like that, man. I also want you to talk to my girlfriend, because I figure if you can get me to listen, man, you can sure enough get her to listen. You know.
I'd be happy to.
Would you please?
She's probably a good-looking chick. I would enjoy
oh,
it.
Oh, she is. Hey, well, she look all right, you know.
Well, you got good taste.
I mean,
you
she ain't
taste.
No, you know, she ain't no beauty queen, but she ain't a beast either, you know.
She better looking than your wife?
Well, I don't know. That's debatable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. She.
Because your wife was pretty good looking.
Well,
it was her old man that wasn't so good looking. She was pretty good looking.
No. My wife looked all right. It was just her ways that made her look ugly.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But this chick, man, she's beautiful. You know.
Your wife was, you know, she had that thing she didn't want you to shoot up. You know, that was kind of a, you know, thing. But came from different kind of folks.
She just wanted to be alcoholic, and I didn't want to drink. That was her thing. You know, she wanted to be a middle class alcoholic. She drank every day, Mike. You know. I didn't choose to go that way. That's all.
That's not bad.
So when can I talk to you again?
I'm here every single day. Door's open. Joy talking to you.
Solid, man.
Any questions on that little confrontation? Well, he's evidently holding a job down there, you know. But I mean, I feel everybody's intelligent, you know. Most people got enough brains. That it isn't the shortage of brains that limits people in this world. Well, I often use the words to people, I think you're intelligent. I just use that. And because I really do believe most people are intelligent. What we measure with IQ tests, I think, has little to do with intelligence. I mean, anyone that's chipping away on heroin and mussing around as much as he is and got a girl on cocaine and still holding his job down, he's got to have a certain amount of brains. Most of us would find that difficult to do, you know. And I think, as a rule, heroin addicts are intelligent. Otherwise, they just can't stand the hassle of heroin, which is a big hassle. An alcoholic might be less intelligent. You just got to go steal a little Muscatel, you know, and that's all there is to it. But to use heroin, I worked a lot with heroin addicts in California, and I found, for the most part, that what I consider to be intelligence, which is kind of knowing what's going on, they knew quite a bit about what's going on. And heroin addicts are always fun to talk to because they are bright, you know, and they are creative. And If they'd use half of that, unfortunately, in doing other things, but most of their creativity is focused into obtaining and using heroin, which is just I mean, tomorrow I'll make an attempt to explain why that is. I think I have some new ideas into why. No, I don't particularly equate academic achievement as intelligence. Academic achievement means you just got enough, you know, but intelligence is really the ability to kind of get along in the world under stress and strain and aggravation, and the average addict has got, you know, lots of stress and strain and aggravation, and especially when he's in this position that this man is in, this man that you played, Richard, is in, where he is making some kind of an attempt to make it, you know. It's not that easy for him, but I got a feeling he's trying, didn't you get, I mean, you know, he is chipping a little bit, but he's making an effort, and you don't want to, you have to be very careful. I mean, the way that this gentleman portrayed Richard, I think he portrayed it very accurately. He is sensitive to the fact that we ought to appreciate he's making a try at it, and why not, you know. What am I going to get by coming down real hard on him anyway? I mean, that isn't going to do any good. On the other hand, I was honest with him, and I said, I do believe you're using, and I believe it so firmly, I'm not even going to bother to test you, really. What? Because he's using. Why go through the hassle? I mean, it's an unreal thing. He'll bluff through. He'll take a urine. It'll come back positive. He'll say the lab made an error, and then we're in another deal, you know. And so I'm just gonna go on the assumption he's using it. These people are telling me the truth. Oh, you mean at the end? Oh. I wanted to see what he would say to that. He reacted the way I expected he would by saying, "Oh, I can con my way out of that." And then I did that purposefully so I could then explain to him he could con me. Of course he could. I mean, he's smarter along those lines than I am. But then I was trying then to get through to him, what's the sense of conning me? I mean, who are you really conning anyway? And I don't want to throw you out. I'm trying to be your friend here. I'm trying to help you out. Why con me? And then when he seemed to soften, because I know he can con me out of the test, why waste the time with the test? I say, I'll just go by what people say, which is where we were to start with. And he didn't object to that much, because by that time, it kind of crossed his mind that maybe he should stay clean for a couple of days. Why not? Maybe he's out of money anyway. I don't know. You know. Well, maybe that was wrong. I don't know. But I think that these people, if I'm not using that information against him, I don't think that it's going to be that bad if they say. I wouldn't accept information from a person unless I tell the person that I wasn't going to bust him right then and there on it. And also I said, if he asks me your name, I'm going to have to tell him. So you don't give me your name unless you want him to know. But they're not scared of him. I mean, these people aren't killers. They're not going to go out and kill the people they're living with. He'll hassle them a little bit. But hell, they're all. I mean, that's all part of the game. They're not. I mean, I never... If I was ever among a group of people when I worked for about a year and a half with these addicts on parole in California, I never felt scared around them at all. I didn't get any fear. They're really pretty nice people. They just have a problem with heroin, that's all. If their problem was using peanut butter, they'd be the greatest people around, you know. But they happen to have a heroin problem, which is unfortunately illegal. But they're not depraved kind of people that you're afraid. I'm much more scared of people that are drinking alcohol, or people are much more erratic and aggressive at times. I don't know, maybe that was wrong, but I'm trying to get the people to realize we're in a house, we are going to tell on one another, but we're not going to use the information harmfully, we're going to use it helpfully. That's, you know. Well, Well, I tried to show. I got the hostility down. I confronted. I said, why do you talk to me like that? You know, and then when I said that, he stopped a little bit and started talking better. And I don't have any other techniques except I don't want to leave hostile. I don't care if it's hostile in the beginning and the middle, but at the end, I want to leave friends. And that's what I was working for. And he felt better about that, too, because he needs a friend in my position. I'm being paid to be his friend, and I don't mean that in a nasty way, but I mean, I'm not paid to be his enemy. I mean, I'm not paid to be the sheriff. I mean, if I wanted to work for the sheriff's department, then I would go to work for the sheriff's department. But my job is not to bust him. He's been busted plenty of times. That isn't going to teach him anything. Well, he was angry at times. You mean, how did I handle his anger? Well, not too often when I'm dealing with people that have serious problems. I mean, if a guy comes over to fix my refrigerator and charges me $50 and it works for 5 minutes after he leaves, I get a little angry because I figure he's paid to be competent, you know. But these people are by definition at this time of their life not competent. And so why should I get angry? It would be their incompetence I'd get angry at. That seems foolish to me. It's like getting angry at a child for if you give a child an expensive toy to play with and he breaks it because he isn't old enough to handle it, you shouldn't get angry at him. That's not, you know, he's a foolish thing to do. Now, I'm not saying that these people are incompetent, but they're certainly having a lot of problem living their lives and they don't need people to be angry at them. So if he yells at me and things like that, and I mean, I figure that's his privilege. That's the job I took. But I've never felt, from almost all the people I've worked with, and I work with a lot of different people, and I worked with some people that were hostile and some that aren't, I mean, all kinds, and I've never felt if I'm genuinely trying to help them any long-standing hostility. And so I felt very friendly with him at the end. I mean, he felt he's going to give it a try. And I know he's got a hard problem. I mean, I realize that, you know, a lot of work we do with heroin addicts is going to be fruitless, but you never know when you'll help one. And if you've got a group living situation, you have a chance. By themselves, I don't think you got much of a chance. Other questions? I might. I don't know how many long I'd give him before I throw him out, but I'm going to play along with him a long time if I get the word he's just using very little or once in a while. What? Well, I don't get any great satisfaction by throwing him out. I'm trying to get him to stop using heroin. I realize that, you know, all heroin use is not to the point of total addiction for 50 bags a day. A lot of it when you is chipping away at it. And I know he's going to do this. He's probably true when he says he doesn't drink much. And I'm trying to get him to cut down, and I'm trying to just kind of work along with him. We're not proving anything here. I mean, he is a known heroin addict. It's different if he was if he claimed he never used it or something, and I had a house where no heroin was used, then if I find out, I might throw him out. But these are all addicts. And so, the facts are that they're going to have problems with heroin. No, he's not there for athlete's foot. You know, it's just that's the problem. And so my job is to work along, keep these people going, keep them talking to each other, and just generally do the best I can to keep them functioning. And the longer they function, the better chance they have, that's all. It's not going to do any good to put him back in jail. I don't see what that's going to do. Let the taxpayers support him and have him get more feelings of worthlessness by sitting in some jail. I don't look at a heroin addict as a criminal unless he's out stealing, you know, which this man may not be doing. All addicts don't steal. Some of them support their habits in fairly legitimate ways if their habits are small. Yeah, I don't know. If heroin was an easy problem, I'd give you an easy solution. But I just tell you, it's a tough problem, and I do
I would do with this man what I did. I can't say I do the same with everybody. I don't know. I don't know. These things, you just work on experience and feelings. But I know my basic instinct is I got to get a relationship with this man who is very chary of relationships, very, very cautious about getting involved with anybody. He's much more comfortable with that first role than he is with the second. I want to give him that second role where he's uncomfortable. The last part of the interview. Was there another question here? Yes. It's like I said, that when you got hurt, the difference between a strong person and a weak person is the weak person just says, I'll do whatever I can as quick as I can to get rid of the pain. And a strong person says, I got to stand this little pain for a while so that I don't do something that's going to cause me a lot more aggravation later. And so the whole program that you deal with isn't how to talk with a kid once or twice to get him to delay gratification. It's how to finally get to the person so they begin to think, maybe I'm the kind of person that ought to watch what I'm doing. It's the slow building of strength in the relationship, and if you're dealing in a home and giving the kid something he can do and congratulating him on doing it well and following up over a period of time, that's ultimately going to work or not work. But there isn't anything immediate that you can say that will break through into their brain so that they'll start to be able to delay gratification. This is just unrealistic. They're going to have a lot of falls, you know, a lot of backsliding, but hopefully the curve is up. I mean, and that's what you're working on. And you know, when you work a while with them, I work, you know, mostly with the girls like you're talking about. For most of the time I work with delinquents, it does go up. They do get stronger. They are able eventually to say, forget it to somebody. It isn't. And part of it is they're getting older. And strength does come with getting a little bit older. When they're 16, they're not quite as strong as at 18 or 19. Part of it is they're facing adult jail instead of juvenile places, and that kind of wakes them up a little bit. And part of it is a lot of the hassle that they get at 16, they don't get at 18. Just because they're legally of age and they can have a drink, or if it's things like that, they just don't get hassled as much. And if you hassle them less, they tend to go off half cocked less too. So it's all these things are tied together. Another question? Yes, in the back. I don't worry about that. The question is, when I get the relationship established, how do I keep the person going to be too dependent upon me? I used to worry about that, but I don't anymore. Within reason, and when I say within reason, to the point where he's not actually living with me, and if I'm working in a place like that, I don't care how dependent he is on me. If he's literally following me around all day, and when I go out to my car, dashing out and opening my car door for me and everything else, that's all fine. I thank him for it, and I appreciate it, and I'll tell him, you know, you're really getting to be a nice guy, and I enjoy seeing you a lot, and you're spending a lot of time with me, and I have an idea that if you be this way to some other people, you can make a hell of a lot more friends. And I just keep, because I don't think there is such a thing as overdependence. I think overdependence is normal among human beings, and independence is abnormal. I think in the general scheme of a human being, it's that way. Human beings are more like dogs, you know, and not like cats who are kind of independent, you know. It's a different story. But I think that we have far overemphasized the need to be independent is one of the Anglo-Saxon virtues, which is no virtue at all. It leads to a lot of drinking and a lot of upset. And the warmth that people need from each other, I don't think the kind of people we work with any more than the kind of people we are. It's like Charlie Brown says, we need all the friends we can get. And so I don't worry about that. I mean, if the person is aggravating me, I'll tell them, look, you're hanging around too much. I can't stand it. Cool it. Just state it right out, but I don't think that there is such a thing really as over dependence. What happens is, and I've had quite a few patients become extremely dependent upon me. I'm just going through a case now where a woman who was very dependent on me, she hardly blew her nose without getting in touch with me. All of a sudden, she says, you know, I haven't seen her but once in the last month, and calls very little, and she says, I got to make it on my own now. And it's really hard to understand how this all came about, but it just did. And I say, that's fine, that's fine. She's now worried that I miss her, you know, and I say, and I do. I mean, she was a very fine person, but the point is that she's going to, you know, it's not real to see and talk to me as much as she did. And it finally, after 3 or 4 years, it just gradually is disappearing, that's all. That's what's happened. She's getting more relationships with other people, which obviously are much more meaningful than she can have with me, and that's fine. But overdependence, I think, is overemphasized as a problem unless the therapist uses the overdependence in some kind of a personal way that isn't good. I mean, you don't then become overdependent upon them, but you do get, you know, I mean, if this addict hangs around and gets better and deals with this man here a long time, they're going to get to be pretty friendly. That's what he's going to make it. Otherwise, he's going to make it. If it gets too much, you just say too much. People are very tuned to that. People don't take advantage, I don't think, very often. Maybe one more question here. We're going to quit for today. Yeah. Yes. I don't, if I was running a halfway house, the last thing I'd care about is proof. I mean, the proof is what I think. I mean, you have to take quite an authoritarian role. That's why I wouldn't give a damn for the urine tests or anything else. I'd say, as far as I'm concerned, you're using something and you can't do it. And I'm not going to, you know, it's the only one you got to convince is me, and you haven't convinced me. You know, and that's it. And so I would deal with it as if they are. I would never get into an argument about are they or aren't they. If I thought they are, they are. And if I happen to be wrong, I'm wrong. I'm going to be right more than I'm wrong. Then I terminate them. If that's the situation, those are the rules, and I terminate them. I don't have to worry about a test. You're out.
Well, I wonder about that. Okay.
I wouldn't myself work in a situation like that if I could possibly help it. I would like to work where I had a little more leeway. If I felt that the person was high and I didn't want to terminate him and I was in that rigid place, then I wouldn't catch him. I'd go in and talk to them and say, today I'm not catching you. I would.